You're listening to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. Despite what we hear from the Trump administration, our country's coal industry is in permanent decline. Coal jobs in West Virginia have dropped 40% in the last decade, and the small amount of coal that remains is hard to mine. But there's one resource that's still plentiful, natural gas. As this industry starts to replace coal in West Virginia, many are asking, will natural gas serve our communities or endanger them? Ken Ward Jr. is a reporter for the Charleston Gazette-Mail in West Virginia. He's investigating this issue in partnership with ProPublica's local reporting network. His recent story is titled, "The Coal Industry Extracted a Steep Price from West Virginia. Now natural gas is leading the state down the same path." Ken, welcome to Midday.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So, Ken, you've been reporting on the environment in West Virginia for decades. Why this investigation into natural gas, the natural gas industry, and why now?
Well, I think that the natural gas industry has really been kind of skyrocketing here for the better part of the last decade. It coincides with the same period of time that the coal industry has been declining. So we've had a bit of experience now to see what the industry is doing, and we've had a bit of experience to see what the regulators are doing with it, and how the state is benefiting from it, and what sorts of harms communities may be facing from it. So it seemed like a good time to really examine that, and so that's what we're trying to spend the year doing.
Mm-hmm. Ken, how much has natural gas production increased in West Virginia in the last 10 years, and is that a direct result of fracking?
Well, I think that the increases in natural gas that we're seeing in West Virginia and nationwide, really, in West Virginia, the production doubled between 2008 and 2012, and then basically doubled again by last year, and it's a function of both hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling, where instead of just drilling straight down, natural gas producers drill down and then across, then they can in what they call laterals, and it allows them to capture much more gas production from a single well pad, and those technologies are causing a boom in natural gas production in the Marcellus Shale in northern West Virginia, and in eastern Ohio and in southwestern Pennsylvania, as well as in other parts of the country.
So when people think of West Virginia, understandably, they think coal. But would you say natural gas now is more the hot button issue there in West Virginia?
I think it certainly is, and one of the things to understand here is that while natural gas production in West Virginia is going on in a 6 or 8 non-county area, kind of in the northern part of the state, in the northern panhandle along the Ohio and Pennsylvania borders, the impacts are happening over a much broader area. We're seeing a number of major pipelines that are being constructed, kind of crisscrossing the state to deliver natural gas to markets. We're seeing an increase in processing plants and for proposals for large chemical plants that would be related to natural gas. So the impacts are certainly a statewide thing that is getting a lot more attention from people.
And we're going to talk about one of those pipelines and plants in a few minutes, but let's talk about how your story begins. And it opens with scenes from the recent West Virginia teachers' strike. Can you explain how teacher benefits related to the natural gas industry?
Well, at the time that I was kind of starting the reporting on this with ProPublica earlier this year, West Virginia had a statewide teacher strike where teachers here had not had felt that they hadn't had an adequate raises in recent years. They were watching the costs of their health care benefits skyrocket, and they walked off the job and closed schools in all 55 counties. And in the midst of that, our governor, Jim Justice, kind of tossed out the idea of, well, maybe we should, we've got the natural gas industry really booming here, maybe we should increase the taxes on that as a source of revenue to fund better pay and better benefits for our public school teachers.
That makes a lot of sense.
And the governor certainly thought so, and the governor has been supportive of the natural gas industry. Governor Justice and his family made their fortune off of the coal industry, but he's been very supportive of growth in the natural gas industry, but his call for an increase in the taxes on natural gas met what I guess was a predictable response from the gas industry, which strongly criticized the proposal. So the idea of meeting the teachers' demands with taxes on the gas industry faded fairly quickly, and it really was a historic kind of a parallel in history here that we've seen before, that went back 65 years ago, mm-hmm. when we had a governor named William Marland, who himself was the son of a mine superintendent, wanted to increase taxes on the coal industry, which was doing well at the time, improve schools and improve the state's roads, he was practically run out of town for that.
Right.
His biographer said it was political suicide, and so the parallels there were very telling for the situation in West Virginia.
Well, let me read the quote from Governor Marlin from 1953, which you have in the piece. He says, "Let's use this equitable source of revenue, because whether we like it or not, West Virginia's hills will be stripped, the bowels of the earth will be mined, and the refuse strewn across our valleys and our mountains in the form of burning slate dumps." I mean, I think you used just a moment ago the phrase déjà vu. This is exactly what's a bit contemplated now.
That's right. I'm not the only one who's noticed these historic parallels. There's a state senator here, Mike Romano, who's from Harrison County, North Central West Virginia, which is a big gas producing county, who has talked about this on the floor of our state senate over and over again. And we have a quote in the story from him about deja vu to 100 years ago when coal was really starting to increase in West Virginia, and one of the long-standing problems in West Virginia is that people from outside view us as a very poor state, but we're actually a very rich state. We've been very rich in natural resources, timber, coal, now natural gas. The problem the state has faced is so much of the wealth from those industries has gone to the out-of-state owners of those resources rather than to support having mm-hmm. better schools, better roads, and those things.
And is that what you're? That's the phenomenon called the resource curse.
Well, that's certainly the resource curse is part of that. The economists who study this kind of phenomenon and talk about the resource curse are talking about a tendency that's been found in the academic literature of people who have studied areas that rely on natural resource extraction and found that the presence of very powerful natural resource industries can tend to sort of suppress the growth of other industries and suppress the growth of all sorts of kind of healthy civic institutions. So I think that certainly is part of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Ken Ward Jr., reporter covering environment, workplace safety, and energy for the Charleston Gazette-Mail. We're talking about his latest effort in conjunction with ProPublica Local Reporting Network entitled "The Coal Industry Extracted a Steep Price from West Virginia. Now Natural Gas is Leading the State Down the Same Path." Ken, are there models in other gas-rich states for taxing the gas industry?
Well, one of the important models that exists in other states is for some sort of a fund, a future fund, or a mineral kind of a mineral trust fund. There's five or six states that have them. North Dakota has one. Alaska has one. Norway is famous for it. It's where you extract a certain amount of taxation of the wealth that's being created by gas or oil or coal, and put it into a fund that's aimed at long-term economic development and creating a diversified economy and a better education system and better civic institutions, things that will help the communities to thrive once the natural resources are gone.
Have they worked well in those places? North Dakota, Alaska, Norway?
I'm not an expert on Norway, but I think a lot of people view that system as having worked well there. You know, Alaska's permanent fund is kind of famous in that it sends a check to everybody once a year. And in West Virginia, there was a movement to create such a fund, and the program was actually created, was written into state law by our legislature a few years ago, but the legislature never followed up on that by increasing the taxes and by putting money into the fund to actually do anything with. So, you know, we've got this future fund they call it in West Virginia a future fund. We have a future fund on the books, but we haven't actually funded the future fund.
Wait, so Ken, let me stop you right there. So the state of West Virginia has a future fund. That means the legislature, they passed it. The governor said it's law. It's supposed to happen. Correct?
There is a program called the Future Fund that's written into state law. The legislature has just not allocated any money for it.
So it
kind of exists on paper.
Okay, it exists on paper. It sounds like a reasonable idea, a great idea, and yet it doesn't go anywhere. Just boil it down. It's because the legislature is enthralled to the natural gas and the coal industries?
Well, I think that it maybe is a bit more complex than that, in that the way the fund here was created, the state's budget would have had to reach a certain amount of surplus before any money was put into it, and at the same time, when the fund was created, there was no companion increase in taxes on the industry in order to have money to fund that. You have to understand, in a state like West Virginia, that is not necessarily the most diverse economy around, a majority of the money that already funds our schools and our roads and our other institutions comes from natural gas and still from coal. Not long after creating the Future Fund, our legislature also passed a slew of corporate tax breaks that created a fairly significant budget crisis the last 2 years. So rather than having a surplus, we had a deficit, and so there's been no money put into the Future Fund.
I have to ask you this before we go to a break. Was it remarkable that the state legislature even got to the point of actually writing in a future fund into state law?
Well, you know, I don't know if I would say remarkable. It took several years of trying, and after it was passed, the main legislator who pushed for it, then Senate President Jeff Kessler, ran for the Democratic nomination for governor on a platform that was mostly about how he was creating this future fund and thought we needed to put money into it and diversify our economy, and he did not win the primary.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I'm speaking with journalist Ken Ward Jr. of the Charleston Gazette-Mail about his investigation. The coal industry extracted a steep price from West Virginia. Now natural gas is leading the state down the same path. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart, and my guest right now is Ken Ward Jr., reporter covering environment, workplace safety, and energy for the Charleston Gazette-Mail. He and the folks in partnership with ProPublica have a new piece out called "The Coal Industry Extracted a Steep Price from West Virginia. Now natural gas is leading the state down the same path." So, Ken, let's talk about what's going on with the gas industry now. Proponents of natural gas say it'll bring jobs back to West Virginia. Is that happening?
Certainly the number of jobs in West Virginia, statewide, in the gas industry has increased significantly as production has gone up. But there's a couple questions about that are kind of important that we're exploring, and one is that in some of the counties that where gas is in some of the counties that are the biggest gas producers, at the same time in the last couple of years when the price of gas dropped, those counties also saw a drop in those jobs. So you know there's always a concern when you have an economy that is so based on energy that it becomes a boom and bust sort of economy that's difficult to sustain. And the other concern that a lot of folks in West Virginia still have is that as this industry kind of grew and started growing in West Virginia, you would go to areas where it was active, and you would see a lot of license plates from Oklahoma and Texas and kind of historic gas-producing states. So there was a concern that many of the jobs were going to workers that some of these companies were bringing in from other places.
Well, yeah, that was a question I was going to ask you. I mean, the companies, rather than hire West Virginians, they're importing temporary workers from other states?
There has been much of that has gone on, and one of the problems with the way that the state's leadership has handled that is there was a movement to pass a law to require a detailed sort of study of that matter, where gas producers would have to file with the state specific information about the residency of the workers they employed, but the gas industry didn't like that part of that bill. So that study was basically scrapped, and that employment data was not provided. So we don't really have a great handle on how widespread that practice is.
Well, does West Virginia have the workforce to be employed by the natural gas industry? Can the folks who used to work in the coal mines or work in coal mines, are those skills transferable to natural gas?
Well, I think certainly some of the skills are transferable and some are not. And one of the things that the state is doing is trying to ramp up its training programs to make sure that workers are here and are looking for jobs are available and able to fill those positions. I know in the construction industry, construction, for example, of many of these pipelines, the hiring of local workers for a lot of that has improved. One of the things that some of these companies, I believe, found out was that building a pipeline in kind of steep, narrow, hilly terrain like West Virginia wasn't exactly the same as building one in Oklahoma. And perhaps the construction workers in West Virginia were better trained and better able to do that sort of work here.
I'm glad you brought up sort of pipelines and things, because the natural gas industry requires a lot of infrastructure, which some see as an opportunity. You just talked about one skill that West Virginian workers would have over, say, folks from Oklahoma in the natural gas industry. In addition to fracking wells, what else is being built as a result of this natural gas boom?
Well, there are several major 42-inch diameter pipelines that would run hundreds of miles across West Virginia that have been approved and are under construction. There have been a number of kind of processing plants that have already been built, and there are more that are in the works. And really for the natural gas industry and its supporters in West Virginia say that there is an opportunity to make this a different experience than West Virginia has had with coal if the state is able to capture some of the spin-off industries where you are separating the gas into its different components and you're building what they call cracker plants and you take some of the byproducts of natural gas and make them into plastics and then you build manufacturing plants to make the plastic logistics into finished products, and that creates, you know, tens of thousands of jobs at lots of different kinds of manufacturing plants, all up and down the Ohio River and through parts of West Virginia, and that sort of, you know, they call it midstream and downstream development. The value added would be something that would West Virginia has not really been able to capture with other industries. For example, while West Virginia has for many years been a timber-producing state as well, we weren't necessarily known for cutting down the trees here and making fancy furniture out of them. A lot of the timber got hauled someplace else for that. So that's really, you know, that sort of value-added development is what the supporters of the industry say can really be the kind of the ultimate benefit to the state if we manage to put that, you know, put that together. In our story, we quoted a guy named Keith Burdett, who used to be he was a state senator here, and he was the head of the Department of Commerce, and he said there's a huge opportunity as far as the products of the gas. If we're just extracting it and shipping it somewhere else, we're like a banana republic.
I'm speaking with Ken Ward Jr., reporter with the Charleston Gazette Mail in West Virginia. I was going to try to get into the weeds on some of this stuff, but I'm going to leave it aside. And let's talk about Fayette County. Why does the natural gas industry have its eye on that county?
Well, you know, Fayette, we published a story last week about Fayette County, and Fayette County fits into this in that it's a historic coal county. The coal had a lot of coal mining at one time, not very much left now, but it is also home to the New River Gorge and to the New and the Gauley Rivers, which are well known for their whitewater rafting. It's a very popular spot for hiking and mountain biking and rock climbing.
And it's supposed to be very beautiful.
It is very beautiful, and a lot of the residents and leadership there have been working hard to make it into a tourism hub, and it's located, you know, all the way across the state, really, from where the natural gas industry is booming, but it was home to a couple of natural gas industry waste disposal sites, places where liquid waste from natural gas, fracking fluids, and those things were being pumped underground. And the residents there became very concerned because one of those was located just upstream from their drinking water supply, and they were concerned about damage to that. And local citizens kind of caused enough of a stir about it that some of the local leadership, the county commissioners, a fellow named Matt Wender, decided that they would ban those kind of disposal of waste from their county, and they passed a county ordinance to do that, much like a lot of other places across the country have tried to pass local rules to control fracking. What Fayette County found out very quickly was the natural gas industry fights back against that sort of thing. A company called EQT filed a lawsuit against Fayette County in federal court and won, overturning Fayette County's effort to ban that waste disposal.
To ask you, was it surprising that Fayette County was able to get this ordinance passed without any opposition from the natural gas industry? But you precipitated my question with the lawsuit from that company, EQT.
Correct. EQT is the second largest gas producer in West Virginia. It's a company based out of Pittsburgh.
And what they wanted to do, and I guess they still want to, they want to build a large compressor station. What is that?
Gas is being transported into pipelines. It needs at various parts to be compressed, and so that it can continue to be shipped along the way in the pipeline. One of the pipelines that's being built here, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, would kind of just barely go through the edge of Fayette County. But it proposes a compressor station in Fayette County, and there's a concern that these compressor stations can be loud, they can be dirty, and the area where they want to put this compressor station is currently not zoned for industrial activity. Fayette County is one of only, I believe, three counties in West Virginia that have countywide zoning. And when the company came to the county and wanted to rezone this area that's currently not industrial so that they could build this compressor station, the county said no. And the pipeline company turned around and sued the county again. That case is pending in the same federal district court where Fayette County lost before.
Mm-hmm. So it struck me in reading the articles that there's a level of organizing and resistance that's happening at a local level, even if big companies like EQT are winning in court and keeping localities in court. It just makes me wonder, and I think we got a question via Twitter, wondering, there are so many other natural resources out there that West Virginia could take advantage of. There's wind, there's solar. Is there any conversation in West Virginia about wind farms or farms of solar panels so that they get away from fossil fuels like coal and natural gas?
Well, West Virginia actually has several significant industrial wind facilities located in our Potomac Highlands, and there's discussion in some circles about using reclaimed former strip coal mine jobs, surface mines, for wind and for solar. One of our big utilities here, Appalachian Power, has said that it wants to do more renewable energy here because that's what its customers want. So there is that kind of discussion going on, yes.
Great. I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I've been speaking with journalist Ken Ward Jr. of the Charleston Gazette-Mail about his investigation. The coal industry extracted a steep price from West Virginia. Now natural gas is leading the state down the same path. Ken, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.